This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of May 28th, 2012. A short bout with the dog days of summer reminded me of how turf can withstand short stress periods if they are adequately preconditioned. The early start to the season has left many high-value areas in good condition. Keep in mind, the cool nights provide a welcome reprieve from heat stress, but now would also be a good time to incorporate seaweed extract into your fertilization program, as there's convincing evidence that the cytokinin and other compounds increase the heat stress tolerance of turf grass. With this in mind, rooting's been good for most of the spring, yet as annual bluegrass seed head begins to wane, rooting also subsides. This is not a time to be pushing your annual bluegrass plants if you're not properly protected from basal rot anthracnose. Adequate fertilization and irrigation will be critical at this time to nurse the plants through the next few weeks before the intense summer conditions, warm nights, and high expectations begin to ramp up. Many questions about calcium use have come up recently, prompting a note in this issue about the use of gypsum and the need for supplementary calcium. This is not a time to be distracted by non-problems when there's enough to worry about with increasing environmental stress. Last week's weather was another above normal week with temps 3 above to the south and 7 above to the north country and along the Great Lakes. Growing degree day accumulation remains consistently high and above normal with a gradient across the region, with the New York City and south about 3 to 4 days ahead of last year, eastern part of the region about 1 week ahead, and western about 2 weeks ahead of last year. Soils in the upper 50s to mid-60s across the region, cooler where it's wetter. Spotty precip with the pop-up thunderstorms passing through the region. The big winners were to the south, with central New Jersey, New York City, and the Hudson Valley 1 to 2 inches, and central Pennsylvania also about 1 to 2 inches. ET values very high an inch or more across the region as the solar radiation increases, approaching the longest day of the year with the sun highest in the sky. It's still good timing for broadleaf weed control with amine and ester formulations. However, watch for high temps as ester formulations can result in vapor drift and injury to adjacent ornamental and veggie transplants. Dollar sprout pressure is expected to be high this week with above normal nighttime temps. The forecast calls for following some dog days of summer last week that persists into Tuesday of this week. Expect a return to normal highs and lows after the storm front moves through by Tuesday. After the front, by mid to end week, expect a trough to set up, keeping us wet, but normal temps in the 70s to 80s for highs and lows in the 50s and 60s. And you can check out all our weather information at the Cornell weather website called the Forecast website. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins with Walt Nelson's Western New York report. The light shower early in the week kicked off a true flush of growth, seed heads of perennial rye, annual bluegrass is fading in dry soils, May and June beetles, adults are out and about, European chafer is still in the grub stage. The Adirondack report from Emily Selleck and Lynn Wilson. The weather certainly increased the need for mowing before Memorial Day, a rare occurrence for sure in the North Country. Golf courses looking in mid-season form with annual bluegrass seed head flush, some June beetles, and some lingering grub damage. The Capital report from Dave Chinnery. Reports of red thread and Veronica in lawns, local school districts incorporating repetitive overseeding based on recommendations from other school districts that has had significant success and a response to the pesticide ban. Many school districts are reallocating their old pesticide budgets to seed and fertilizer. The Eastern Long Island report from Tom Kowalsik. Adequate rainfalls help reduce reliance on irrigation. Clover is in bloom, increasing questions about control and knowing that 2,4-D alone does not control clover, whereas dicamba and MCP present in most three-ways will work. Also, questions about nutsedge control now that it appears has a flower in the boot, and questions about soluble calcium. The Westchester report from Rick Harper and Jared Giordano. The number of red thread sightings are as high as rain gauge levels, showers, and thundering downpours soak local turf. Commercial mowing is proceeding on wet grass, raising concerns about proper cut if blades are not kept sharp, super sharp. Broadleaf and grassy lawn weeds have exploded with white clover blooms abundant even as yellowing poa annual recedes, prompting numerous calls about poa control. In the lab, yellow nutsedge and orchard grass samples are the weed of the week. The latter the result of using straw mulch when seeding to avoid the expense of salt hay. Paper mulch seems the choice of very few local contractors. Our regional update begins with the United States Golf Association Northeastern Report from Jim Skoralski, senior agronomist with the USGA's Northeast Region. And this is excerpted from their regional update that you can find on the USGA Green Section website. The season is progressing nicely to date, and I believe most managers are happy with the state of their turf as the beginning of summer approaches. The rooting I've observed in the putting greens has generally been good in well-managed soil sand-based greens. But then again, that is what we expect to see in late May with optimal soil temperatures and no extraneous events. It's critical to create optimal conditions for root development in spring and equally important to do whatever possible to maintain that root mass as long as into the summer as possible. This can be very challenging and at times impossible with annual bluegrass greens. The decline of root systems greens usually begins at some point in June after annual bluegrass has completed seeding. Soil temperatures begin to climb and maintenance intensity increases. A gradual transition to the summer heat allows the annual bluegrass some opportunity to reestablish its energy reserves and continue to produce new roots or at least retain the roots it has. A fast blast of heat in late May and early June often spells trouble for annual bluegrass and a long summer for managers. A note about nut sedge from Randy Prostak, extension weed specialist from the University of Massachusetts. There are growing complaints about yellow nut sedge problems in turf not being controlled by traditional herbicides labeled for use. There are two key points, one biological, one chemical. Nut sedge produces perennial storage organs or nutlets at the end of the rhizomes that, if not controlled or regrow where the leaves may have been killed. The key to getting the leaves killed and killing the nutlets, sort of a post plus pre-control strategy, is to apply in mid to late June when the plant is shuttling energy produced in leaves to the nutlets and the herbicide can move with energy, thereby killing the nutlet. The chemical aspect of control with sedgehammer, halosulfuron, formerly Manage, must be applied with a non-ionic surfactant, that is a surface active agent. In fact, the label clearly states, use a quarter to a half a percent volume to volume of a non-ionic surfactant at 1 to 2 quarts per 100 gallons of spray solution for broadcast application. For high volume applications, do not exceed 1 quarter of surfactant per acre. Use only non-ionic surfactants that contain at least 80% active material. Outside of New York, multiple applications of Dismiss or sulfentrazone have been shown to be effective in Rutgers research plots. And my gazing in the grass update begins with a note about gypsum use in turf. Gypsum has long been used in the process of reclaiming agricultural soils suffering from excessive amounts of sodium. Such soils are essentially structureless because the sodium prevents aggregation of the clay particles. The function of gypsum is to provide a low-cost source of calcium ions that displace sodium ions from the soil's cation exchange sites. The sodium ions are then leached out of the soil during long periods of intense irrigation. Replacing sodium with calcium on the exchange sites permits aggregation of clay particles and eventual formation of soil structure. In general, we don't have sodium soil issues in Northeast, so no reason to use it for that. Some might say we need gypsum for the turf sulfur requirements, seeing as gypsum is calcium sulfate. Turf is a low sulfur requiring crop, and potassium sulfate rather than potassium chloride is used almost exclusively in turf fertilizers. For every pound of K2O applied as potassium sulfate, approximately 0.3 pounds of sulfur is being applied as well. Considering that turf grass requires approximately 8 times as much potassium as sulfur, we can readily see that use of potassium sulfate on turf will very effectively avoid having to apply gypsum as a sulfur source. Research reported on in 1901 sheds light on why many remain obsessed with using gypsum or any other form of calcium these days. This work presented evidence that soil calcium to magnesium ratios affect plant growth. By the 1940s, researchers had accumulated enough evidence to formulate what is known as the base cation saturation ratio theory. According to the BCSR theory, soil is not an optimum environment for plants unless 65 to 85% of the cation exchange sites are occupied by calcium ions, 6 to 12% by magnesium, and 2 to 5% by potassium. In short, what this series suggests is that plant accumulation of sufficient quantities of these nutrients depends more on their ratios in soil than the amounts actually present. When this theory is applied in the interpretation of soil analysis, it is possible to conclude that even soils with a pH of 6.5 or more require additional calcium or magnesium to ensure their presence in the proper ratios. Several research projects showed that the evidence strongly favors the notion that plant growth and accumulation of calcium, magnesium, and potassium is much more dependent on the amounts present in soil rather than their ratios. Ratios become the prime factor only in extreme conditions deliberately created in experiments. It is in light of this convincing body of research that most soil testing laboratories do not apply the BCSRR theory when interpreting soil analysis. Thus, they do not recommend adding calcium or magnesium to soils whose pH values are already satisfactory for plant growth. Retired Penn State scientist Don Waddington and his graduate students carried out on turf at 8 different sites in Pennsylvania in the 1970s. They applied calcitic lime with a calcium-magnesium ratio of 14 to 1, phosphorus and potassium prior to establishment of several turf species, and on turf ranging from 2 to 10 years in age. Soil pH on the 8 sites ranged from 5.1 to 6.5, and the soil calcium saturation percentage was less than 65% on 7 of the 8 sites, and averaged 45% over all 8 sites. Hence, according to the BCS theory, the turf grass should have responded to lime application, if not because of increased soil pH, because of an increase in calcium saturation percentage. What actually happened was that liming had no significant influence on turf grass clipping weights, turf grass quality, turf tissue calcium content, or any of the other research sites. It is time to stop making gratuitous applications of gypsum to solve imaginary problems. Annual bluegrass type and irrigation. Annual bluegrass biotypes ranging from true annuals to long-lived perennials. It is widely thought that turf grass management practices can be altered to promote certain biotypes and minimize undesirable seed head development. A study at Utah State University examined the effect of irrigation frequency on lateral spread and inflorescence development of annual, perennial, and intermediate biotypes. Lateral spread of all biotypes was reduced by more than 60% at the lowest water level, 4% volumetric water content. But changing irrigation from the highest frequency of 12% volumetric water content to an intermediate frequency at 8% volumetric water content increased lateral spread of the annual biotype 30% and decreased inflorescence density by 25%. These results suggest that less frequent irrigation have the potential to increase growth and decrease annual bluegrass seed head development. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi. I'm the associate professor here in the Department of Horticulture at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.